Nationwide, we bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Hello and welcome to Nationwide Discussion Hour with me, Gabriel Shadar, and of course this is Radio Miraya. And today we'll be speaking with the outgoing head of delegation of the International Committee of the Red Cross, and that is Florence Gillet, and that is to shed light on her time in the country, and we will see how the ICRC has been coping with many events in the last few years, especially during her tenure here, and also what would be the perspectives for the organization, that is the ICRC in South Sudan. Welcome to Radio Miraya's nationwide program, Florence Gillet. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Gabriel.
And first of all, how long have you been in the country as head of delegation? And you must have been somewhere before coming to South Sudan.
So I'm ending right now a 2.5 years mission as head of delegation for the International Committee of the Red Cross, or ICRC. I was actually in South Sudan as a deputy head of delegation from mid-2012 to early 2014. So I've been here in Juba. Actually, I was in Juba on the 15th of December 2013. And then I was a desk officer covering South Sudan and Sudan until late July 2016, so still keeping in touch very much with South Sudan.
Something special that made you to stay all this long in the country?
I think something special is the population, the people of South Sudan that are, very much in need. And I must say that's an important point, and that's why the ICRC has had such a big footprint in South Sudan for many years. But who are also amazing people. And it's a place where you understand why you wake up every morning and what you're achieving, and also where you really can engage with the population and all the stakeholders.
Mm-hmm. And you must have picked some kind of local languages, terminologies and all this, or not very much, because you are spending most of the time in the offices.
I've been spending some time in the field, but I would don't want to upset anyone, so I would remember some words of Juba Arabic, some words of Kakwa, some words of Nuer, some words of Dinka, but this would be, then I don't want to upset anyone, so I'll stick to English.
Okay, I didn't mean that you will be talking in those languages. Well, the ICRC is a big organization. It's in many places in the world. Interestingly, and you came here 2013 December, you said?
No, I was here from mid-2012 till early 2014. Uh-huh. So I was here in 2013.
Yeah. So you have went through all these times in the country. And of course, the ICRC must have transformed in one way or another, or must have evolve in one way or another, covering a lot of things, especially during the critical times of the conflict and critical times of the flooding and natural disasters and what we call human-made disasters. So what can you say about how the ICRC is operating currently in the country?
Hello. I think it's important to keep in mind, to remember that the ICRC mandate links into conflict situation. I think it's really important, and that's also why you would have seen our size vary over time in southern Sudan and then in South Sudan, depending on the consequences of conflict. Our response also has evolved over time. There have been different times. We had a very large team and footprint as of December 2013. We grew very much as the conflict escalated. I must say when the conflict de-escalated to some extent after the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement, we actually didn't decrease at the same level, then the conflict was decreasing, and we also focused quite a lot on intercommunal violence. However, in 2023, the ICRC went through financial challenges and also had to re-reflect on what is the identity of the ICRC globally, but particularly in South Sudan, where unfortunately we had to decrease our footprint by half in a very short time in 2023. And we did so looking at the areas that were affected by conflict at the time, which was much less than today, looking at the impact of the Sudan conflict, which normally is not something we necessarily do in other contexts, but because of the proximity between Sudan and South Sudan and the fact that they are conjoined twins that were separated at independence, as I say, we took a particular approach to it. So that's one axis where we looked conflict-related, but we also looked at the specific sector where we have a unique role in South Sudan and a unique added value. And some of those elements are more specific to South Sudan, so they could apply to other contexts in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So geographically in 23, a lot of our focus was, of course, in the southern part of the Equatorias because of the conflict situation there. We were still looking at some of the remnants of some conflicts around Malakal, but also looking at an axis that was an east to west along the border with Sudan, with the arrival of refugees and returnees from Sudan, not overlapping with the UN system, because, of course, the UNHCR and IOM have a very specific role in that regard, but either complementing the response in location where UNHCR and IOM were working, as well as the whole humanitarian sector, but also focusing on areas that were less covered because they were more difficult to reach because there had been some conflict. So mm-hmm. That was what we did in 23. We also worked, we still have a response to help returnees from Sudan, linked to Sudan, the Sudan conflict in the first few mm-hmm. months. Our focus had changed this year, and I'll come back on that. What mm-hmm. we retained also in terms of where we have a unique added value, I think at the core of the ICRC is international humanitarian law. So ICRC is a guardian of international humanitarian law, which is the law that applies in times of conflict or the law of armed conflict. So this involves a lot of work at all levels. It goes from working with the authorities on ratification and implementation of international humanitarian law instruments or laws, but also a big part of the work we do is with the weapon bearers that are linked to the formal army, but also to non-state armed groups. And we work with the chain of command to ensure that all those who are taking part in hostilities, who are fighting in conflict, have a chance to be aware of the rules that apply and what it means. So that's something we've always done,
mm-hmm.
And we had to do more this year.
Mm.
We also look at when there are issues of respect for the international humanitarian law, but unlike other organizations, we don't have a duty of reporting. On the contrary, there is an acceptance globally that the way we work is we really try to work with the chain of command to prevent occurrence of violation of IHL, and then we also work with them on trying to find solutions to alleviate the consequences mm-hmm. of such violation.
Yeah.
We work in relative discretion with them and trying to make things progress.
Yeah.
A second axis, I think, is really what relates to war and weapon wounded. And this goes from the, looking at first aid, which we do with the South Sudan Red Cross, our primary partner in South Sudan, or also directly. And then we work with the different health institution, MOH structures, to ensure that those war and weapon wounded have a referral system to be treated. In a number of cases, we actually have to transfer or to coordinate transfers of those wounded to places where they can be treated. We are talking about the severe cases. And then we treat the war and weapon wounded. with a permanent program in Juba Military Hospital in partnership with the Juba Military Hospital. But we also this year, for instance, deployed to the Rank County Hospital of the MOH, to Akobo County Hospital for a long period. And the last weekend we went to support the MOH team as well as MSF and the SSPDF Medical Services to respond to the wounded from the Adong situation. So it's a whole chain. And then, because it doesn't stop there, unfortunately, a lot of people who are war wounded or weapon wounded have disabilities. And for that, we have a partnership with the Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Welfare, and a long-standing partnership that before independence was also something we were working on with in Lokichokio in Kenya, which was the main reference at referral point at that point. But we now work and support three of the centers of the ministry, the three main centers, one in Juba, one in Rumbek, and one in Wau. So that's the second axis where we have, I would say, a unique added value. Another unique added value of the Red Cross and Red Crescent movement that the ICRC is part of, and so therefore in close collaboration with the South Sudan Red Cross, is all the work we do to reestablish and maintain family links when there are displacements. So, of course, the closer it gets to conflict, the more the ICRC would be involved, but we also support the South Sudan Red Cross to work on other type of separation linked to, for instance, natural disaster. And finally, we have a whole part of our work where we work in detention, in places of detention. That's quite unique in the way we do it. And we work with detaining authorities to aiming at looking at how to meet, to move towards international standards in terms of treatment and of detainees and conditions of detention. So that is something we've always done. Now, 2025 has been a year of many changes in South Sudan. We've seen a sharp escalation in the hostilities. And then we had to change our approach within all the things I described. And so we do all the things I described, but we had to step up our response from the work we do on international humanitarian law, but also on the war and weapon wounded. We had much more war and weapon wounded severe cases to treat this year. We are close, actually, to 880. I discussed with my health team just this afternoon cases, which is way more than last year, that we treated ourselves. There are other lighter cases that are treated by others. But we also have faced new waves of significant displacement. As per our count, which is not statistically easy to confirm, I would say. We so far have close to 450,000 people who were displaced by the conflict, by different conflicts in South Sudan this year. And this doesn't include intercommunal violence. We, unfortunately, have not been able to support all of them because this is beyond our capacity. But we still have assisted close to 200,000 people so far in various ways. Right now, for instance, we have teams working in the Tonga corridor, so in northern Jonglei, but in places as, in PG County and in Fanga County. We also have teams that are right now providing emergency response to the people who displaced from Western Equatoria, the Najero County, towards Bazia in Western Bahr Ghazal. And we also have a response in Jo River and in Mundri East. Those are only some of those responses, but just to say that only if you add up all those people, you have tens of thousands of people who displaced quite recently in in a number of those places.
Yes, and all of this is attributed to your core values and the founding of this organization. The horrors of the World War, Second World War, and your pioneer and your founder, and that intervention where you go amid battle, amid a lot of destruction, and you go there and you identify yourself that you are a humanitarian. And it is really maybe challenging, and it is really maybe also for those who are engaging in these kind of conflicts. Now, you said you are engaging with the state actors and those who are also involved in war and all this to find your way through. So what is the entry point for engagement when things happen, when a conflict erupts and so, and then you have wounded people? And in South Sudan, people are wounded in places, unimaginable places, in the bushes, in the swamps and all this. People are displaced to where you don't have roads and all this. How does it work?
First, we have to keep in mind that the ICRC has been working, started its presence in Sudan at the time in 78, so way before even the struggle, but it was linked to the war between Ethiopia and Eritrea. But we actually started to respond to the struggle as of 83, and have been permanently in Juba since 86. But we have been also in many locations in South Sudan, very many. If I was looking at a map of all the places we have been permanently based, it would be quite impressive. So we have built relationship with the communities. We have built relationship with the weapon bearers. We have built a relationship with also some people who today are at high level, whether in terms of, you know, the SSPDF or non-state armed groups, that have known us as ICRC for decades, for some of them. So they know where to find us, I would say. And I would say also that we had a big program in Lokichokyo in Kenya, where we were doing war wounded surgery for many years. But we also worked from Khartoum into the areas that were controlled by the government of Sudan during the struggle. And we also had war surgery from that side. So we are known for that, which is one big entry point. We also have a lot of people who are today either in political position, administrative position, or still weapon bearers, who have been undergoing through training on international humanitarian law. So we have a big network with all those people. They understand, as you say, our values. Also, I think the neutrality of the ICRC. We don't take sides. We are not for one armed actor or another one. We don't take sides in politics either. Our impartiality, we prioritize the need of the person based on, you know, and that's how we would decide how we would try to go first somewhere. And a full independence. We are fully independent. We are independent from the United Nations. We are independent from any government.
Yeah.
This is a privilege, and I think that it's something that makes that it's possible.
Of course.
Now, as you say, sometimes it's very difficult to go to some of those places. So already, actually, in 2013, where there was a conflict in what is today the Greater Pibor administrative area, that stage not yet, we already started to have challenges on how we reach the wounded, but we also had challenges on reaching other areas in Jonglei, I remember. And what we did is we managed to get a helicopter to be able to transport the wounded where the plane could not land. We have our own plane. Mm-hmm. We have one helicopter. At some point, when the violence escalated, as of December 2013, we had many more planes and helicopters that could allow us to go and collect. Now, as I said, the times are a bit different financially, so we had to cut down on our air capacity. Mm-hmm. However, we still have a helicopter. Actually, we have two right now that allows us to go to certain areas which are more challenging. But we also have increasingly looked at how we can lower the cost whilst maintaining the service, working with other actors, finding alternative ways. For instance, we had a lot of wounded from Nasir and Oulong who came to Akobo, where our team was deployed to do surgery by boat. So that's one option. We also had some of the wounded who came, you know, through rivers to points where we can collect them. However, there are still areas of South Sudan where we cannot, and we have to be very honest with that.
Yes.
So that's. But we also work with other actors. We are, as I said, with close coordination with the MOH, with the South Sudan Red Cross, who will tell us also where they are wounded, with organizations such as MSF, and we try to find the way.
Yeah.
So that's you know, logistically it's a challenge, and you have to be creative. We also had some wonder that, recently, several times as we were going along the Tonga corridor, we actually had to, we brought back wonder to Malakal. And from Malakal, either they got treated in Malakal or transferred to Juba. So it's tricky. Now, how can we move in all those places? It's because we, we engage with everyone. I think it's sometimes, you know, challenging. You have to negotiate. You have to say, look, it's really important that we go. And it's important that the wounded have access to healthcare. But I think this is something that is understood in South Sudan. For the assistance, sometimes it can also be challenging, but the same thing. We talk with everyone, and we also talk not only with the weapon bearers, with the militaries, with the armed forces, the security forces, but also with the community leader, sometimes at governor's level. The governor can also have influence. And that's how we manage to move around. That's how we negotiate our access.
As you are speaking, I've been remembering, even here at this station, around 2006, 7, something like that, we were having a program called Miraya Connect. I think you remember that if you have been here. And it was very interesting, the kind of, and up to today, people are still looking for that program, this reunification of families. How was it for you there, this experience?
I think it's a difficult work for all the volunteers of the South Sudan Red Cross, for their staff and for our staff, because it's really, you need to prioritize where you go, how you go, to meet those who are the most at risk of having been separated from their families. People can also come to us. They can go to any SSRC branch office. They can come to ICRC delegation. There are some phone numbers, which I don't have with me, but they can contact. And I actually indeed remember that we worked with Radio Miraya in the past. So sometimes we do use that. So what we do today is a bit different than what we were doing in the past also, because in 2025, you have means that you didn't have when you were in the 80s or 90s. So the traditional Red Cross messages that we were collecting, and then we were trying to find the addressee. And I'm always amazed on how we can manage to find the addressee, but we do in many cases, has now been replaced because nobody writes letters or very few people. So we still take some Red Cross messages, but we also provide phone services. And of course, we will concentrate where you have a lot of people who are at risk of having lost the contact. So one obvious location would be transit camps, refugee camps, you know, where you have had all those people arriving from Sudan, but also the transit camps, points of arrivals, because there they fled the conflict in Sudan and very often lost everything. In South Sudan, it's the same thing. When you have people who have displaced, this is when they are at risk of being separated. So when I said, you know, I mentioned all those locations where I said we were providing some emergency relief, we also provide family links. We also listen to the story of the people, trying to see if they have been victims of IGL violation and work on it. We also look at water. One of the things we have is we have this ability in conflict-affected area to come with a limited but still quite multidisciplinary response, and that's how it works. Unfortunately, you don't always find the people. And you have what we name the missing persons. That after a while, if you can't find them, those persons become missing. And then we work with the families of missing persons, to see how they can be the best accompanied through this very big challenge. Because when somebody is missing, is a bit different than when somebody is dead. You also have different challenges.
How does it work? It works like somebody comes to you and say, I am missing my family, or I'm looking for my family.
Well, they are saying, I'm looking for my family. We try to see if the traditional way to find them works, and if it doesn't, at some point they will become the missing case. They go into the missing person's families group. And for those, today we have 6,000 cases of missing persons that are open in South Sudan, they are open in South Sudan, and they are not, we don't provide services based on nationality, but based on where people are.
6,000. Since when is this?
Alors, it has been for quite a number of years, around 6,000, because every year there are some that are closed, either positively, so we do see family reunification. We do see people that we find after years. Some cases are closed because, well, unfortunately, the missing person might be confirmed dead.
Yeah.
Or there are different reasons. And some new cases are open. So there is a rotation. You know, it's not that the same 6,000 at all times.
Yes.
Actually, we think this is highly underestimated, and there are much more. But those are those who approached us to look for their relatives.
Mm.
And we work directly trying to accompany those families as ICRC, but also with the South Sudan Red Cross and with the authorities, with the Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs, for instance, that has worked on preparing a missing persons bill that we hope will soon become a law. So we look at different aspects.
Yeah. The listeners, Radio Miraya, this is a Nationwide Discussion Hour. And with me in the studio is the outgoing head of delegation of the International Committee of the Red Cross, that is Florence Gillette. And she has been telling us here her experience, which is spanning a lot of years. And she's going. And soon I will be having the lines open for the listeners. If you have had an impact, I mean, if you have benefited from the ICRC in one way or another, this is the time to share this feedback with Florence here in the studio. And if you have any comment on how you feel the ICRC has been offering all these tremendous services, the lines will be there. And the lines are 091206-7879, 091206-7929. And the SMS line, I think I have a problem with the SMS application here. And so I will not be able to pick new SMS. But those are the lines. And I will be coming back after just a very short interlude.
This is Radio Maria, keeping you informed and engaged.
Nationwide, we bring you latest current issues, discussions, and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Yes, and Florence, as we are having the listeners, let us give some few minutes to the listeners. As I said, if you have an experience, a positive experience with ICRC and also their partners by extension, that is the Red Cross, South Sudan Red Cross. This is the time we can have that. Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Can you put off your radio so that we don't get an echo? Yes, who's calling?
Hello?
Yes, yes.
Are you listening to me?
Yes, I'm hearing you, and you can switch off your radio so that we can hear you. Yes.
I'm out of radio.
Yes,
so I'm very happy. I can appreciate the outgoing lady, because what she's done in South Sudan here is very grateful.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. My name is Peter from Gudele.
From Gudele, so you appreciate what the ICRC has been doing in the country. And,
Yes.
So thank you very much for your positive feedback. And again, the lines are 091206-7879, 091206-7929. Hello? Hello? We seem to be struggling with the line there. Are you getting me? I'm not getting you.
You're not getting me?
Now I'm getting you now. Mm-hmm.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. Who's calling?
This is David Luka from Rumbek.
David Luka from Rumbek. Yes, tell us if you have any opinion about... we've lost David. Let us call and let us pick another caller. Hello? Hello?
Hello.
Yes, welcome.
Hi, Peter.
Yes, welcome. Who's calling?
Yeah, thank you. This is football from Akobo.
Welcome from Akobo.
Yeah, so what I wanted to say is about the appreciation to those of ICRC, because what they have been done to here in Akubo is very big work which they have been done to these people. So what they have done in Akubo, but we never forgot, because they were committed to solve the problems of society. So I want to give to those of ICRC, thank you for their contribution. Or thoughts were done in general. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That is another call, and I have another call here. Hello?
Yes, good evening.
Good evening. This is Nationwide. Who's calling?
This is Peter Gatkos calling from Juba.
Peter Gatkos from Juba. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Gabriel. I just want to appreciate the outgoing ICRC. And once again, also, I want to thank ICRC for the work they have done in South Sudan. Mm-hmm. In 2008, up to now, ICRC has been working in South Sudan during the conflict time. They're doing very much work. So I would like to appreciate them for that. And also the outgoing ICRC who is in the studio with you. I really appreciate her work. May God be with her. So that is what I want to say. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Gatkos, calling from Juba here. Is still with me in the studio is the outgoing the head of delegation of the ICRC, Florence Gillette, and she's here. And this is maybe her last interview with us here before she leaves the country. And we understand she has been here since the 80s, and she has been through it all with the South Sudanese. This is a very unique time and a very unique experience for an international staff to be dedicated so much to this country. Hello? Hello?
Hello, hi.
Yes, welcome.
Hi, Mark Jacob Tan from Malakal.
Jacob Tan min Malakal, marhabek.
Hi, nana manashkur South Sudan Red Cross, ICRC, nana manashkur shadid, shokol u maamul fi jinub Sudan. Umsadu nas, banarabul, usadu nas ajaysin, u shokol batav nabif yani. Shokol u maamul, shokol mashallah, nana manashkur rabana, sanidium, shokol zere kani.
Shukran, Mutasil min Malakal. And we are getting more positive comments on this, and this is the appreciation we are receiving from maybe many places in the country, and the phone lines are congested here, but hello?
Hello?
Yes, welcome.
I'm talking with John Kulang from Malakal.
John Kulang min Malakal. Akfila Radio Ptak Shwaya Ashan Nasmak. Welcome, John Kulang.
I close it. I think, basically, South Sudan White are thanking ICRC from the very beginning of their coming in up to the point of outgoing now. So we all appreciate ICRC for the well work done they have done to South Sudanese. And we wish them to continue, if it should be.
Mm-hmm. So, good. I should confirm that it is not ICRC that is going. It is the head of delegation going.
And oh, head saying, delegation.
Yeah, okay. But the ICRC is going to be with us here. But this wonderful woman, head of delegation, called Florence Gillette, remember that name, she's telling us goodbye. So thank you very much for your message. Yeah.
Tell her to do very good under there, and I wish the one incoming should have the same spirit like the outgoing.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the call there. And, of course, these are some of the few callers that, there. If we had the SMS line working here, you could have seen a lot of messages. And, well, this is amazing and this is interesting, Florence. And let me pick this caller. Hello?
Yes.
Yes, welcome.
Yeah, good evening.
Good evening.
I want to appreciate the head of the nation, which is approaching to leave the country. And I just want to wish her a safe journey, and I'm happy for the struggle that they have done in the struggle of South Sudan through these suffering people fighting alongside. They have helped a lot. So I wish the upcoming delegates have to do the same. They have to also know that South Sudan is still in war and still there is a lot of crisis. So I just want to wish him, wish her just a safe journey back home, and they have to just go and take care of the family and the friends and the everyone. Just have to send our regards to them that we have greeted the people from that side.
Who is calling?
Yeah, this is HV Emma in Ye.
In Ye. Thank you very much, calling from Ye. Thank
but
you.
The problem is that applied, is it in 2013 to be a driver, did not even get recruited. And in 2018, 2023, I've applied, but not even get position. But there's no problem since SRC is still existing. Maybe God is there. They are going to call me.
Thank you. Thank you for your faith and your trust in the ICRC. Thank you very much calling us.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Now, we come back, and I meant to ask that question because you can't go away without having this feedback from different corners of the world, I mean different corners of the country. And I can say ICRC is one of the few organizations that has this kind of integrity that is being recognized all across the board. And this feedback is really touching, and it's really true. It's authentic. There is no kind of sugarcoating this kind of positive vibes. So, what do you say with all this evolution of what has been happening in the country and this footprint you have left? ICRC has touched many families, but with all those thousands of staff that you have been supervising and working with, building their capacities and all these kind of things, these are the foot soldiers we sometimes forget to speak about them. Yeah.
Thank you very much for bringing that point. So thank you very much first to all the listeners who have called in, and I'm particularly happy that they called from Akobo, Ye, and Malacca, because I know pretty well those three places. And I've seen also the work our teams, ICRC teams, have done in those places. So I think it's important for us to, yes, we have the ICRC staff that work with us, but we also work with a lot of SSRC volunteers and SSRC staff, so from the South Sudan Red Cross, and a lot of other partners. And I think it's important to keep in mind that we have right now 24 partnership agreements, I think. And on top of those partnerships agreements, which can be with NGOs or with some administrations, we also work a lot with women associations, with communities in remote places. I was in Ye last week for a discussion with families of missing, where I've been also in other places where I've seen how our teams engage on preventing stigma for survivors of sexual violence with community influencers, as we call them. So people from the community. So there are a lot of people who are participating in ensuring that we have this impact. For our staff, for the volunteers of the SSRC, for all those people, I think there are a lot of challenges. The situation is very complicated, very difficult, because they have a tough job, but they also have a tough living environment in different ways, depending on where they are and at which point in time. I must say we are highly concerned by the level of insecurity and criminality that we see in a number of places. a number of our staff, but also of, you know, staff from our partners, of volunteers working with our partners, have been victims of pure criminality. A number of all of them have also been indirectly or directly touched by the conflict. And it's difficult.
Yeah.
It's difficult, but what is admirable is that they're still here. I mean, some of our staff could have, as you said, have developed a lot of their skills and competencies. Some might have also could decide at some point, let's move somewhere else. You know, it's difficult.
Yeah.
No, they still are here with the people, for the people. And why? Because the people of South Sudan are amazing people. But it's extremely challenging.
Yeah.
And the economic situation is also such that it puts a lot of pressure. You know, some of our even, you know, lowest paid colleagues have seen the number of people they have to feed multiplied by two or three since I'm here because of the devaluation of the pound, because of the inflation, because other people are losing their job. So it's also that they contribute to their families and their communities in many cases. So they are not under a lot of stress, security-wise, work-wise, because this is still hard work, pressure from the family, pressure from the community, and it's, you know, like concerns about what's happening with their children, are they getting the education they should get to become who they want to become. But it's a lot, it takes a heavy toll on our
yeah.
staff. But they are still here, and I think it's really important to see that, and have some of our colleagues have been working with us for 30 years.
Yeah.
When was that? Last year, two years ago, we had one of our colleagues who celebrated his 30th anniversary with the ICRC. So they are, I also came back for them because, I mean, those staff are great people, but also for all
yeah.
the communities. I mean, it's, you know,
yeah.
meeting communities in Yei, Akobo, Malakal, or in other places, you
yeah.
know. Or in, wow, it's
yeah.
great.
Unfortunately, time has run out, and let's see about your next destination.
First, I go to see my loved ones, as mentioned by one of the listeners,
yeah.
To spend some time with my family and friends. And then I'm going to, normally I should go to the Democratic Republic of Congo. To Goma, another location with a lot of challenge.
Yeah, we are familiar with Goma and all these places. And merci beaucoup pour venir ici et de parler avec notre audience.
Shukran jazilan.
Shukran jazilan. And that is the end of today's nationwide discussion hour. And it has been a wonderful experience, conversation. With a very dedicated person, unforgettable person and service from Florence Gillette, head of delegation. All the best for your next destination and your next service.
Thank you very much, and all the best to the population of South Sudan.
And that is all from me, Gabriel Shadar, on Nationwide.
Nationwide, your daily current affairs program on Radio Miraya.